Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information and support.
Hi everyone, it's a great pleasure to introduce Richard Schuker. It's been a while since we've done one of our eye condition series interviews, but Richard has kindly agreed to join us. Hiya Richard.
Hiya Joe, how are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. Yourself?
Good, not too bad at all, thanks. Thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome. So do you want to tell us, for starters, what your eye condition is?
Yeah, it's a bit of a mouthful. It's Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy, basically called LHON for short.
That's perhaps as well, isn't it?
yeah, it is. How do you want me to start? Would you like a big bit of the history of it, or how do you want to do
Yeah,
it?
That'd be brilliant. Yeah? If you can give us a bit of the history. Yeah.
From the conditions perspective, I only recently found out that it was discovered by a German doctor back in 1898 or 1899, Dr. Leber's, and he stuck his label on it, and so that's why it begins with the word Leber's. Basically, it's optic, as in the optic nerve, hereditary, as in it's, well, passed through the generations of families, really, and neuropathy, because it affects the nerve damage. And that's basically the whole condition revolves around the optic nerve mostly. There are various strains of it, some of which I'm not that familiar with, but it's a rare condition as well. And so there wasn't a lot of research done into it. And I'm quite an old hand at it, because I've actually had it exactly half my life now. Which is 26 years. So you do the maths.
Right. So you weren't. So you didn't have this when you were born then?
No, I used to drive and everything. I was driving.
Oh, right.
Right up until I got, I had a full sight, 2020, whatever they call it now, 2020 vision. Yeah.
So did you? Was it just a routine optician's appointment?
No, I'll go back to some historical, because it being a hereditary condition, my mother contracted it in 1976, and they didn't know what it was, because it was back in the dark ages of eye conditions, and so they thought she had all sorts of other neurological conditions, but weren't related to the eye, so they were doing lumbar punctures and blood tests and all sorts. And eventually, after they got a specialist, that was only one, I think, around at the time, they discovered that she had what they called then Leber's optic atrophy. And so basically, that was a condition that my mother learned to live with. And there wasn't much around the way of genetics then, or DNA. It was all out there stuff. So we didn't know much about it, really. But there was a thought process that it was hereditary. And so my parents invested some money and took me to Harley Street to see a specialist. And there was a possibility that sometime in the future, this 11-year-old kid may contract it. But being an 11-year-old, it wasn't being on an end all for me at that time. I didn't think of the enormity of it, should we say.
Yeah. So how did you sort of find out, what was the process sort of thing for you, as your sight, presumably you noticed your sight deteriorating or something?
Yeah, it was 3 days before my 24th birthday, sorry. And I was living in London at the time, and I just noticed there was a light switch, and I would see the light switch, but then I would miss it, and then it'd come back again. So I would lose it in what is considered your central vision, and then it would come back in the peripheral as it went across my field of vision. Mm. And I thought, that's either a very strong hangover, or there's something not quite right there. I do live on my dark side of humour, I'm afraid. It's the one thing that gets me through things like that. But it was one of those moments where I thought, there may be something wrong there. So I took some Nurofen, or the equivalent at the time, and went to sleep, woke up, and it had got slightly worse. And as I said, I was living in London, so I went to A&E at Moorfields. And again, because it was 1988, and again, the dark ages of sight condition and genetic stuff and that, it took them 3 months to figure out what I actually had, because it's so small, the difference they noticed, especially the early stages. And in that 3 months, it got to the stage it stayed at for nearly 20 years. So, I didn't deal with it that well, sadly, but that was a whole different ballgame. I didn't tell anyone for 3 years, which was a real shame for me and possibly for them. I just sort of disappeared for a while, should we say. And then one day I woke up, thought, hang on a minute, I'm still here and it's still looking at that with the same eyes. So I eventually informed my mum, and that didn't go down that well. She was a bit upset by it, but it needed. We started a process then, and I started seeking support while I was being nagged in my left ear.
As they do, as mothers.
So as I said, I was diagnosed in 88 with Leber's optic atrophy, as it was called then, and was put on a load of tablets, 24 tablets a day, and vitamin B12, 1,000 milligram injections into my arm, which initially the nurse used to give me. And then they said, oh, you can do it yourself now. I went, really?
So and do you?
Not now. This went on for 3 years. So I was injecting myself for 3 years into my arm. And yeah, so it didn't help. It had some uncomfortable side effects, but it didn't do anything specific, really. And so I did all this, and I found it really hard. I think I distanced myself from people rather than they distanced from me. So I put barriers up before they even got the chance to decide for themselves, looking back on it. And that was a shame, really. But again, you only look back reflectively and see if I needed it slightly different. But hindsight is a wonderful thing.
It is.
So eventually my mother nagging me convinced me to come to this place called the Manor House in Torquay, which was a rehabilitation centre. Yes. So I went with a day return ticket thinking anything to keep mum quiet. But it was, dare I say, the making of the new me, because I was constantly trying to be the old me, and that was never going to happen. So it allowed me to get used to being me. And it sounds a boring thing to say, but it taught me the best skill I ever known as a vision impaired person, which is I learned to touch type.
And to
me, that's one of the best skills you can ever have.
Yes.
It saves your neck ache. It saves all everything.
Oh,
else.
Yeah.
But it's really an important, but it's a boring but important skill to learn, especially, dare I say, the quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog.
Yes.
For those that don't know, that's every letter of the alphabet when you learn to touch type.
It is, especially when you have to type it to music. Yeah. You don't have to do that.
No, I can't.
Oh,
we used
to make us do that.
Oh, I kept falling asleep because I got that bored. I did a line of Z's once, so that was quite amusing. But it was great fun, and it was making of me decided that I liked who I was now, and I liked what potential was out there. And I didn't know what I was going to do, and the people I was with at the Manor House were all going to this place called Hereford. And I thought, never been there. What else am I going to do? Go back to Essex or go on to Hereford? So I went to Hereford and learnt what I could do and how to do similar things slightly differently. And it was good. It was great to build those friendships, but also to rebuild those skills again in a slightly different way.
Yeah. So where are you at now? What's your situation?
Wow. Well, I've been working in the VI sector, sorry, the visual impairment sector for 12 years now. Used to work for Action for Blind People, and sadly, they no longer exist. I now survive day consultation, and I now work for the RNIB as a sight loss advisor, and I'm based in the Southwest. And whatever I did or didn't pick up, both good and bad, I now have the opportunity to share that and other skills, hopefully with people who are not quite as far down that journey or beyond and still haven't got that support before. So it is good in a way to get paid for something that I get a buzz from.
Yeah.
And I really do enjoy it. And it's, as you can probably tell, it's difficult to maybe shut up sometimes. But it's not easy as well. It's not easy. So there are good days and bad days. And you get on with it. But I don't think you ever get totally used to it. But you just get on with it. And my family keep me very active, even at my tender years.
I'm going to make an apology now. I think my retired guide dog is going to have a coughing fit.
Okay.
So if she does, I do apologise. We can always edit this bit out.
Can we say it's Theresa May, can we?
So what would your advice be to somebody who perhaps, because I was born with a sight problem, so we always knew that eventually I would probably lose my sight, but actually going through sight loss, sort of as an adult is a different kettle of fish, isn't it? So what would your advice be to somebody? I know you do it as a, you know, you're, like you said, you're a sight loss advisor.
I want to put this in a personal way rather than a professional way, because it's from the heart that matters, and it's
absolutely
what you need to do is not ignore it. It doesn't go away. And sadly, with sight, usually it only gets worse. And there is opportunity to stabilize, sometimes repair, but at least manage and help people through a process if you capture it early as possible. And so do go to the eye department. Do try and speak to what we now have in place at eye departments as well, which are ECLOs, eye clinic liaison officers. I mean, the one we had in Exeter here, sadly, is not with us anymore. We have two others, but sadly, is not with us. She made me understand what I've got on a global nature, because I used to think I was not the only person with it, but a very small community with it. She put me in touch with the LHON website group society, and I now have various contacts throughout the world who have conditions that I have, which gives me an understanding and a bit of a sort of family spirit as well, and an understanding of what's going on with other people. And so it's a real opportunity to meet people who have knowledge, direction, information that can point you in a direction when it's right for you. Some people will go in there straight away and say, I want to go back to work. Some people are going to say, why me? And it's just about managing that time that works for you. But early, it's a statement that everyone says, but early intervention is so important, both for the medical staff to try and save, protect and secure, and both for you to gain that information to make those informed choices when it's right.
Yeah. Because it can be, it is a grieving process, isn't it?
It is, totally.
You know, and you need that time. And it's not wrong to do that, you know. You need to give yourself that time. And it can be for your families as well, can't it?
Very much so. I mean, in the early days, I saw the bottom of a few bottles and I shed a heck of a lot of tears. But, you know, you have to go through some of these processes. And I see people who just go, right, I've got this, I'm going to get on with it now. And I think they're brilliant. And I see other people that went the same route as I do, and I think they're brilliant. And it's just about doing it in your way, in your speed, in your time. And the people out there, hopefully, that can help, possibly like myself and others, understand the pace is set by the individual, and they will help to nurture you through that in the best way that can work for you. But it's not the end of something. It's just the beginning of something new. And it's just understanding that. I think that's the hardest thing for a lot of people. It's the end of being a driving instructor. It's the end of flying jets. But there are many, many other things. I still scuba dive. I still sail. I have a family, and I do all the other stuff that everybody else does, really, within reason. So, yeah, it's all out there.
Yeah.
And there is information.
It just changes.
It does change. It does change. But life is constantly about change, whatever walk of life you're in.
Yeah,
and definitely. There's anxiety, there's depression, there's everything for everybody out in the world, and it's just a matter of being able to manage that in whatever form that comes in, and looking on the happy side and that dark humour that never leaves you, I hope.
I think a lot of us VIs are quite good at that, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Gets us through.
Absolutely, and it's educating. Ignorance is not about, I think, people being nasty or whatever, or unkind. It's just about lack of information and understanding, especially when you're talking about sensory, because it's an invisible disability to most people, so it's quite scary to people who don't have it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you ever so much, Richard, for giving us an insight into your experience of sight loss, and
you're very welcome,
giving some really good advice as well there.
Very welcome,
say,
both of you.
Spoken from the heart, not just as a, you know, as a sight loss advisor.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you ever so much.
You're very welcome, Joe. Cheers. Bye.
You can contact us by emailing podcast@vitalk.co.uk, on Facebook by searching for VI Talk, on Twitter @VITalkPodcast, and our website address is www.vitalk.co.uk.